Dr. William Luther Pierce. The year 2000. The significance of the Holocaust.
Hello. I was very pleased by the response to last week's broadcast. I've always thought that most people are more interested in specific, anecdotal, and personal commentary than in more general and impersonal commentary, and that's why I so often talk about very specific instances of black crime or liberal hypocrisy and nuttiness or political corruption and treason with names, dates, and places. But I'm pleased to note that we do have many listeners who really care about the general principles underlying all of the specifics. Today I'll begin in a general way, but then we'll move on to specific evidence to support the general theses. We'll start with the general role of the Jews in European or white or Aryan or Gentile society, whichever term you prefer. My thesis has been that the Jews, as a whole, always are destructive, morally destructive, socially destructive, even intellectually destructive, but above all, racially destructive. Any society, any nation, any people which gives the Jews a free hand to do what they want will be destroyed by them. This is so because it is in the nature of the Jews to destroy everything which is non-Jewish, and because the Jews have a unique faculty for destroying other people's societies. I'll come back to this thesis in a moment with some evidence, but first we should note the problems it presents to us in our educational program. One problem is the inability of many of our people to generalize at all. They see everything only in individual and personal terms. You tell them that the Jews as a whole are destructive to our society, and they'll say, "Oh no, that isn't true, because I know some Jews who aren't doing anything destructive at all. They're just minding their own business and trying to earn a living like everyone else." They can't quite grasp the concept of Jews as a whole. All they can see are Abe and Dave and Izzy and Sarah as individuals. A second problem is the other side of the coin. Many of our people cannot think about the role of the Jews objectively because they have been convinced that the Jews as a whole aren't like everyone else. They are special and deserve special consideration. They're not subject to criticism like other people. And I'm not referring primarily to the fundamentalist Christians whose preachers have taught them that the Jews are God's chosen people and can do no wrong. I'm thinking of the somewhat more sophisticated people who have been taught by the mass media and the schools that the Jews are exempt from criticism because of their unique victim status. They suffered so much in the Holocaust that they deserve special consideration. And to accuse them of bad motives or wrongdoing is like kicking someone who is down. Certainly, if we exclude the most primitive and superstitious Christians from consideration, it is the massive Holocaust propaganda which makes it difficult for most people to think objectively about the Jews. And let me tell you, it was planned that way. We'll talk a lot more about that, but first let me finish my general thesis. I said that the Jews as a whole are socially, morally, intellectually, and racially destructive, and that they have a unique faculty for being destructive. The reason for this is their unique mode of existence as a parasitic minority in a non-Jewish host population. Sometimes this dispersion or diaspora as a minority among Gentile hosts has been supplemented by a geographical concentration of Jews in Palestine or Babylon or another Jewish center, and sometimes not. In either case, parasitic is the applicable adjective. There are other parasitic minorities, of course, but none are anything like the Jews. Gypsies, for example, exist as a parasitic minority in most white countries. Gypsies generally are considered a nuisance because of their proclivity for stealing, and when they become too much of an irritation, they are chased away by the local people. But gypsies never have an ambition to take over a white nation and suck it dry. They never try to subvert the host population. They never try to take over the schools or the newspapers and propagandize their hosts. They generally want to live among themselves, maintain their own identity, and exploit their hosts just enough to get by without causing a strong reaction. The Jews, on the other hand, always try to take over. They don't want the crumbs from Gentile society. They want everything. Gentile society, of course, resists, which is why the Jews have been expelled en masse from every nation in Europe time after time during the past 1,000 years. The Jewish method of overcoming the resistance is to corrupt the nation they are attempting to get their hands on. One aspect of the corruption is simple bribery. If you have enough money, you may be able to buy privileges from the leaders of the nation. That worked when European nations were ruled by kings, and it works even better when a society is run by elected politicians. But if you really want to suck a nation dry, you need to go beyond bribery. You need to destroy a nation's solidarity. A nation is, after all, like a large extended family with everyone related by birth, even if very distantly. You're either in the family, a member of the nation, or you're an alien, not in the family. That's the essential distinction. So if you want to take over a nation, you need to make the members of the family, the citizens of the nation, forget their identity and their traditions. You need to corrupt the nation spiritually and morally as well as politically. You need to erase the distinction between insider and outsider. Then you are no longer an outsider, and the resistance against you crumbles. Understand? That is and always has been the Jewish method. Take over a nation by destroying it, by making a rootless, cosmopolitan, multicultural cesspool of it. In other words, you need to gain control of the flow of information and ideas in the nation. You need to gain control of the mass media, of news and entertainment. Then you can corrupt the nation's soul. You can determine which opinions will be fashionable and which will not. You can reshape the defining myths of the nation to suit your own ends. You can poison the minds of the children and turn them against their own people. You can steal the people's knowledge of their own past from them and thereby be in a better position to steal their future too. You can plunder the nation at will. And that is exactly what the Jews have done to every Gentile society, every white nation since the Second World War. Of course, corrupting a nation's soul may turn out to be a fairly large and complex undertaking, and lots of tricks may be required to get the job done. When it comes to tricks, however, the Jews are in their own element. The slickest and most effective trick the Jews have pulled since the war is their famous Holocaust trick. I've spoken with you before about the Holocaust. I've pointed out that the way to see through the trick is to examine it piece by piece, claim by claim, detail by detail. That's the way to separate the lies from the half-truths which they have skillfully woven together. That's why anyone who refuses to swallow the whole thing, anyone who refuses to bow and genuflect in the presence of the Holocaust, anyone who irreverently says, "Well, let's examine this thing and see what it's made of," is denounced hysterically as a Holocaust denier. Today we'll look at what a Jew has to say about the Holocaust trick. The Jew is Norman Finkelstein. He's a professor at the City University of New York, and he's a leftist. Like some other leftist Jews, he's at odds with what he sees as a fascist government in Israel. More than that, I believe, is his concern that the greedier and more ambitious Jews will overreach themselves and bring disaster down on the heads of all the Jews. He's especially concerned that the Holocaust myth will come unraveled and result in an enormous Gentile backlash against the Jews. He would like to defuse the thing before it blows up. And so Finkelstein has just had a book published for that purpose. It is titled The Holocaust Industry, and his fellow Jews are not happy about it. In fact, they are screaming for his blood. It is a dynamite book. It was published last month, and you can get a copy from my company, National Vanguard Books, or from Amazon.com, even though you probably won't find it in your friendly neighborhood bookstore. Finkelstein spends the first few pages of his book documenting the fact that the Holocaust is a Jewish myth constructed more than 20 years after the end of the Second World War. The term did not come into general use until after 1967. Everyone understood, of course, that Jews had died during the war. No one questioned the fact that there were concentration camps where many Jews, gypsies, communists, homosexuals, and other undesirables were segregated from German society. No one questioned the fact that toward the end of the war, when conditions in Poland and Germany became chaotic, conditions became even worse in the concentration camps, and many concentration camp prisoners, weakened by malnutrition, died from typhus and other diseases. No one questioned the fact that on the Eastern Front there were mass shootings of Jewish hostages, or that Jewish political commissars were separated from Soviet POWs and shot. Many civilians on both the German side and the Jewish side died during the war. But it wasn't until more than 20 years after the war that Jewish leaders calculated that there was much to be gained by portraying the Jews as the principal victims of the war. And so the Holocaust myth was constructed for this purpose. Mixing some facts, usually exaggerated or distorted facts, with lots of invention, the skilled mythmakers of Hollywood and New York brought forth the Holocaust, in which innocent Jews became the principal victims of the war, pushed into gas ovens by the millions by sadistic Nazis. Finkelstein notes that the two defining dogmas of the Holocaust were, first, the claim that it was unique, the claim that no other persecution in all of history was even close to the Holocaust in magnitude or severity, the claim that the Holocaust gives to Jews the status of the premier victims of the world. Nobody else has suffered as much as the Jews have, and so nobody else is entitled to as much sympathy and compensation as the Jews. To suggest otherwise is tantamount to sacrilege. The second defining dogma of the Holocaust was that it was a completely irrational act on the part of the Germans and was in no way based on anything the Jews themselves had done. The Jews, in other words, were wholly blameless victims. To suggest that perhaps it was some behavior on the part of the Jews which provoked the Germans was to blame the victim, a very politically incorrect sin. It was a transgression against this second dogma, the dogma of irrationality, which caused one of Germany's most distinguished historians, Ernst Nolte, to be cast into the outer darkness by the Jews and their Gentile allies. Nolte has pointed out in his writing that one of the reasons Hitler was determined to break the grip of the Jews on German society was their support for communism. And this also was one of a number of reasons the German people shared Hitler's dislike of the Jews. The overwhelming role of the Jews in Soviet communism, and also in the communist movement in Germany before Hitler became chancellor in 1933, was well known in Germany and elsewhere. And the atrocities committed by the Jews against the Gentile populations of those countries under communist rule, the artificial famine in Ukraine in which millions died, and the mass shootings of Ukrainian peasants, for example, were well known also. So when Noether received an award last month for his work as a historian, the Jews went into their Chicken Little act, a lot like the act they staged when Austrian Jörg Haider's party entered the Austrian government a few months ago. Noether was being rewarded for blaming the victims, the Jews and their apologists screeched. Finkelstein quotes some of the leading Holocaust propagandists in this regard. They see any form of anti-Semitism as a Gentile mental pathology with no rational basis. According to Holocaust High Priest Elie Wiesel, the anti-Semite is driven by, quote, irrational arguments and simply resents the fact that the Jew exists. Wiesel writes, quote, for 2,000 years we were always threatened. For what? For no reason, end quote. Daniel Goldhagen, the author of Hitler's Willing Executioners, one of the most outrageously self-serving Holocaust propaganda books, writes that anti-Semitism is, quote, divorced from actual Jews and fundamentally not a response to any objective evaluation of Jewish action and independent of Jews' nature and actions, end quote. The Jewish novelist Cynthia Ozick explains it by saying, quote, the world wants to wipe out the Jews. The world has always wanted to wipe out the Jews, end quote. Finkelstein's book is especially valuable because it is so well documented. He cites dozens of other books and gives specific references to a number of especially revealing statements by other Jews. He also spares no scorn in talking about charlatans such as Wiesel and Goldhagen. He shows up Wiesel as a pious fraud whose standard speaker's fee for lying about what happened during the Second World War is $25,000. Wiesel's popularity is based on his ability to look solemn and spout utter nonsense without cracking a smile. He doesn't talk about reality, but about the sacred, ineffable mystery which is the Holocaust, a mystery beyond all understanding or explanation, which must never be examined or questioned. And his Gentile audiences just eat it up. I must admit that I thought a Jew couldn't be embarrassed by this sort of fraud, but apparently Finkelstein really is embarrassed by Elie Wiesel. Finkelstein's explanation as to why the Holocaust was invented is essentially the same as mine. The Holocaust gives the Jews immunity from criticism for whatever they do to non-Jews, no matter how atrocious, and it gives them a rationale for demanding a handout from the rest of the world. Finkelstein does a very creditable job of establishing this explanation by detailing the way in which the Jews have squeezed the Swiss and others for billions of dollars in Holocaust reparations. He writes, and I quote, in recent years, the Holocaust industry has become an outright extortion racket, end of quote. Certainly, Finkelstein's book should be read by anyone interested in what the Jews are doing. It is filled with very valuable information. It does have one extremely serious shortcoming, however. It blames the Holocaust fraud on a few greedy and unscrupulous Jews. Finkelstein writes about the activities of some of these Jews. Edgar Bronfman, president of the World Jewish Congress. Rabbi Israel Zwinger, the Secretary General of the World Jewish Congress. Rabbi Marvin Heer of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Abe Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League, and so on. And the greed and pushiness of these Jews is indeed breathtaking. Finkelstein reveals, for example, that Simon Wiesenthal, the famous Nazi hunter, rents out his name to the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles for $90,000 a year. actually, that's a good deal for Rabbi here and the Simon Wiesenthal Center. Here rakes in millions of dollars every year from guilt-stricken Gentiles by reminding them that they didn't save enough Jews from Hitler during the Second World War. But the fact is that if there were only a few greedy conspirators involved, the Holocaust industry never would have made a profit. The average couch potato never would have heard of it. The average soccer mom wouldn't feel a twinge of guilt whenever Elie Wiesel invokes the sacred Holocaust mystery. So-called Holocaust studies would not be a part of the curriculum for high school students in 17 states. Israel wouldn't be able to build a huge arsenal of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons without a peep of protest from anyone and then demand successfully that Iraq be bombed back into the Stone Age for trying to do the same thing. The fact is that the Holocaust industry was built first and foremost by the mass media, and literally hundreds of thousands of Jews labor in that particular vineyard. A few ambitious Zionists and greedy Jewish hucksters may have come up with the original idea, but Steven Spielberg has done infinitely more to build the Holocaust myth than all of the greedy Zionist officials together. Furthermore, the Holocaust has been endorsed and supported by nearly the entire Jewish community. Nearly every Jew wants his share of Holocaust profits. Those like Finkelstein, who have done anything at all to expose the fraud or even to disassociate themselves from it, are a very tiny minority. Finkelstein certainly understands that, but he doesn't admit in his book that he understands it. He doesn't want to indict the Jewish community as a whole for the fraud, but in fact it is the Jewish community as a whole which is guilty. I said earlier that the Jews as a whole are destructive, and I used the example of the Holocaust to support this statement. The Holocaust is supported by and benefits Jews as a whole, not just a few of them. And the Holocaust is destructive to us, to our nation, in a thousand ways. The Holocaust shields Jewish organized crime in America, for example. Janet Reno's Justice Department is afraid to tackle the big Jewish gangsters the way it tackled the Italian mafia. The white sex slave trade is able to flourish in Israel, and no politician in the United States will do anything to oppose it because it is a Jewish business. No politician in our government will threaten to cut off aid to Israel. Hillary Clinton can participate in an international conference on protecting women and deliberately and knowingly sabotage any measures which might put a crimp in the Jewish trade in sex slaves, and no one has the courage to criticize her for it. There's really a lot more than crime and money and political corruption involved in this Holocaust racket. We let it control us. We let it rob us of our courage, and it destroys our souls. Well, I've spoken in earlier broadcasts about many of the issues involved in the Holocaust racket. I'll speak about other Holocaust issues in future broadcasts. It's a big subject with many facets. What you can do now is read Professor Finkelstein's book, The Holocaust Industry, and then think about what you've read in the book when you watch the Bush campaign dance all around Al Gore's vice presidential choice, Joseph Lieberman, afraid to lay a glove on him. You'll understand why they're afraid to say anything critical of Lieberman. Thanks for being with me again today.